good afternoon, everyone. Today is November 4th, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues in Houston, Texas. And we are going to be discussing Parshat Chaye Sarah. And you could find it in your Chumash, beginning on page 41. And we are going to have a close look at the sale of Marat HaMachpelah that Abraham, I want to say purchases, but maybe not, from B'nai Chet to bury Sarah. And we're going to look at the language, or actually some of the missing language of the text. And we're also going to deal with a fascinating question, which is, why is there nothing in this discussion between Abraham and B'nai Chet about a written contract for the purchase of this land, right? When we buy land, a house or anything, when you buy anything these days, right, the most certain way to assure that the purchase is complete and is going to be respected is to have a contract about the sale signed by the buyer and the seller. This was a very important thing for Abraham. You see, he goes through a very lengthy conversation, or if you will, negotiation with Ephron and the other B'nai Chet in order to make sure that he gets this ma'ara, that he gets this cave. And there's no discussion that there was any type of written document as to the purchase and sale. And that's also going to be interesting. We're going to look at that from an archaeological perspective. I mentioned to you this book I got last year called Parashat Derachim, written by Yitzhak Maitlis. Yitzhak Maitlis is a leading archaeologist in Israel. And he wrote a book that has two or three articles on each parasha, sometimes more, using archaeological evidence to help us understand what's going on in the Torah better. It's really an ingenious book. I bought this book in my last trip to Israel. I came home. I said to my wife, Gabi, I said, look at this great book I have by this guy. She goes, oh, Yitzhak Maitlis, that's my cousin. It turns out that it's my wife's cousin. Now that I didn't even pay attention to the author when I bought the book. Had I read it, I would have remembered, because I've visited with his mother before, with my wife. So
that's amazing.
It's a really amazing book, and he's an observant, very, very observant firm Jew who's a leading archaeologist. It's a great book. So let's look at one curious aspect of this sale first. Now the problem with this now is going to be that I, based on this interpretation, I think that the JPS, the translation that we have here, is a bad translation. It's not, in this case, it's not precise. It may get across what is the most general understood meaning of the text, but it's really not precise, and I'll show you why. Let's look at verse 4. Now, Yitzchak is Israeli, and I forgot your name?
Ora.
Ora is Israeli. So don't look at the English, because I'm going to ask the two of you a question. Look at verse 4. On page 41, Ger v'toshav anochi imachem, I am a resident alien, right? Tinu li achuzat kever imachem. Please translate that for me, Ora. Tinu li achuzat kever imachem.
Give me a burial site with you.
In your midst, good. Do you agree?
Yes.
Okay. The English says, sell me a burial site among you. Now, what would the verse say had it meant sell?
Kanuli,
mecholi, right? It would have used language of buying and selling, but it doesn't. It uses tenu. So for our purposes, every time you see the word tenu, or in the English, every time you see the word sell, you have to change it to give.
Even I know that.
You have to change it to give, okay? So now let's read it. Let's just read the English. I am a resident alien among you. Give me a burial site among you that I may remove my dead from you. And the Chittites replied to Abraham, Hear us, O Lord, you are the elect of God among us. Bury your dead in the choices of our burial places. None of us will withhold the burial place from you. For in your dead day, upon Abraham bowed low to the people, and he said, if it is your wish that I remove my dead for burial, you must agree to intercede for me with Ephron. So let him, look at 9, v'yitainli. Again, it says sell, but it is let him give me the cave of Machpelah that he owns, which is at the edge of the land. Let him
give it to me.
Give it to me. Yitnena li. Give it to me. Let him give it to me at the full price for burial site in your midst. Ephron was present among the Hittites. So Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham to the hearing of the Hittites, all who entered the gate of his town, saying, no, my Lord, hear me. I give you. Ah, finally. It's interesting, right? Why here? This is very interesting. Why here the translation all of a sudden move from sell to give? Okay. I give you, it's the same word, natati lach, I give you the field and I give you the cave that is in it. That's also interesting. You have to look at that, right? What did Abraham want to get?
The cave.
The cave. What does Ephron want to give him?
The land and the cave.
The cave and the field. So why? Abraham only wants to buy one thing. Why is Ephron forcing him to buy something else? Sounds like a bait and switch. All right, but we'll see. I give it to you in the presence of my people, bury your dead. Then Abraham bowed low before the people of the land and spoke to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land, saying, if only you would hear me out, let me pay the price of the land. Accept it from me that I may bury my dead there. Okay, and so that it goes. So the word, the root, the shoresh, nun, tough, nun, appears 7 times in this conversation. The shoresh, kuf, nun, hey, to buy, appears once. And only at the end. If you look at the end of this of the story, only at the very end in verse 18, La Avraham limikna le'enei b'nei chet, to Abraham and his possessions in the presence of the Chittites. Possessions there could mean purchased possessions or possessions he had. So what's missing from this entire conversation is the language of buy and sell. Right? We always assume he went there to buy it. But he never once asks it to be sold to him. He asks it to be given to him. So what's going on? And if he asks to be given to him, why is there an exchange of money?
Mm-hmm. And if it's so obvious, how come nobody brought the JTS up on it? If even I know tame is give. I'm not Israeli.
Because in context, according to most interpreters, this was a regular give and take. It was a regular sale, but others see it differently. And I want to point that other interpretation out to you because it's fascinating.
But it's written here that he actually bought the sadeh. Only the sadeh is mentioned.
You buy the field, and I give you the mara. Right.
So right. Maybe that's it. He sells the field, but he gives him the
cave. But we have to first understand, but the field's only introduced later. Why does Abraham say, give, 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 and they say, we'll give, we'll give, we'll give?
Maybe it is in the connotation of it. Give me, and it's obviously not for free. In other words, if I...
But it's not that the Torah doesn't have the word.
Give me your house. Give me your house.
You would never say that. You wouldn't go and say, I'm going to give me your house. You'd say, I'd like to buy your house. Right. There are different words.
But nobody will, that's give me your house. Obviously, you expect to be paid.
Expect the Torah to be precise in its language. And it's not like if you would say the Torah never has the word kuf nun hey, never deals with, but all over the place the Torah has that shoresh. Right? Well, and so some want to argue the following, based on archaeological evidence that they found before and based on knowledge of the ancient Near East, one thing we have to understand, if you were not a citizen, if you're not a Hittite citizen, you could not purchase land. Okay? You could not purchase land.
How do you know that?
That's based on archaeological evidence and based on what people know from the ancient Near East. Right. That's why it's important that Avram says Geber Toshav. He's telling them, Geber Toshav, I'm not really, but I want this land. So now let's figure out a way. What's going on here is Abraham is inviting them. It sounds like he's inviting them to find a way to break the rule without breaking the rule. Abraham wants to uphold the letter of the law, but he wants them to break the spirit of the law, right? The rule is if you are not a citizen, you cannot buy land. In fact, one of the key ways that the Torah tries to prove this is look at the language that Abraham uses. Is ger v'toshav anochi imachem. He says at the very beginning in verse 4, ger v'toshav anochi imachem. If you look, let's look at, let's jump just, this is like the Torah commenting on the Torah. This is ingenious. Jump to Vayikra chapter 25, verse 23, which is on page 266. This is about all the rules that sale of land in Eretz Yisrael at certain points reverts back to its original owner. Okay? Why is that the rule? Look at verse 23. V'ha'aretz lo timacher litzmitut. The land must not be sold beyond reclaim. Ki li ha'aretz, because God says the land belongs to me. Ki geirim v'toshavim atem imadi. Same language. Avraham says ger v'toshav, and God says geirim v'toshav. Meaning, there's no that it's the Torah is telling us by using the same language that something is going on here. Just like you can't buy the land in perpetuity because it's God's. You can't sell the land in perpetuity with God's. Same thing with Abraham. You were not allowed to make a permanent purchase of the land from these people unless you were one of them. So now Abraham has a problem because he wants this. So what is his option? His option is what's called in halakha ha'arama, a little like back door, right? A loophole. A loophole. What's the loophole? They're going to give me the land, and I'm going to give them money. It's a gift. I'm giving you a gift, right? But the land, you're giving me the land. That's allowed. That was permitted. They were allowed to sell the land, but if they were allowed to give
them a donation.
Right. He gives them the land. Let me read you from the commentary of the Dat Mikra, who is where I see this from. It's really amazing. He says, once you establish that you're not allowed to buy land unless you are a member of the Hittite people, it says, Hatzadim hanogim bedavar hu tzruchu efo linkot tachsisei ha'arama mishpatit de lakof et achok v'minhag v'nidun. They had to find some sort of loophole in order to overcome the law. Ulefichach lo niskeku min halei ha'masa u'matan lal shonot kuf nun hei u'mem chafresh. They never use the buy and sell language in the conversation. El arak lulashon natan. 7 times they use the language of giving. Virak pamachat lulashon shukshin kuf lamid. Only once do they use the language of weighing out the money. Virak besium ha'iskan niskaka katuv lulashon miknan. Only when the whole thing is done does the Torah revert back to the language of purchase to show that Abraham now had this. Lashon acher, ein medabrim am lechirah kniya shel mikarki. And we're not dealing here now with the buy and purchase and sale of land. Sharei zo asura. That's not permitted according to their rules. Aval medabrim al matana bilvad v'zo muteret. Okay, fine. Now, so that is a very interesting thing to say. That's why, right? Oh, what's the money between me and you? What's the money between me and you? Because really I'm giving it to you, but I really want the money, but I can't make it a sale. There's all this double talk, right? What the Chatam Sofer calls divarim ha-muchpalim. Double talk. Okay. Kefel, there's double talk. In fact, ma'arat ha-machpelah. The whole thing is about...
That's why it's called.
That's the play on words. It's called Marat HaMachpelah. Some say because it had a cave inside of a cave, or maybe there was an aliyah an upper chamber and a lower chamber. Some say it's called Maracha Machpelah retroactively because the pairs, right, the pairs of husband and wife are buried in there, but that doesn't make sense to be called Maracha Machpelah now.
Double.
Kefel is double, right? So the Chatam Sofer says not only is the cave double, the whole conversation is double talk, where they don't want to say what they have to say. Right, and so therefore they're trying to talk around the law. Okay,
they don't want to break the law,
they don't want to break the letter of the law, but they need to break the spirit of the law. So that's why it says, for example, Kesef over l'socher hanitan l'notein et hamikarkein af hu kiviyachol matana. And now the commentary here mentions something really amazing. He talks about the lend-lease agreement that existed in America in 1941. In the 30s, actually starting from post-World War I, America signed a bunch of neutrality acts, one after the other, saying they are not allowed to sell arms to anyone involved in a conflict. Comes along World War II, and France is immediately conquered by the Nazis. The only ones who are fighting the Nazis before America joins is England. And England has run out of arms. They need arms. But we have a law in Congress that you can't sell. So Harry Truman signs the Lend-Lease Act of 1941, which is, we're not going to sell you arms. We're going to lend them to you in return for leases on army bases in the various countries. It's a way, it's a loophole around the rule. The rule is, the spirit of the law, right? So therefore, the letter of the law is maintained.
Did he have a Jewish advisor, Truman?
Truman, yeah. He had the guy who was partners with in the
hat
store.
It was his friend.
He was a partner. They had a haberdashery store.
But this is before.
And he's just with Jewish.
Right. That story becomes famous in 1948, when he recognizes Israel. But so it's an amazing thing, right? We have this all the time. We have a spirit. You have a letter of the law and the spirit of the law. No one likes the letter of the law, but you can't break it. And then there was a cash, and then these neutrality acts said you could have weapons based on a cash and carry rule, meaning if England wanted money, if England wanted a tank, they had to pay us up front for the tank. Which was America.
But it's not a sale.
Meaning, no, that was permitted because that would say it's just a transaction. We have no skin in the game. Once we sell you the tank and you give us full, once you give us full kesef male, right, mizuman, once you give us full cash, we have no more skin in the game. We don't care who wins because we got our money. But if we give you this tank on credit, then I want England to win because if England loses, I'm never going to get my money. So it was only cash and carry, but England had run out of money. They couldn't pay. So as a way to help England, because England we can't sell it to them on credit. England can't buy it for cash. So we have the lend-lease agreement. So that's what's going on here. We have a rule. We can't sell it to you, Abraham, but we're going to give it to you, but you're also going to give us money, which is not a sale. It's a gift. And that's what's going on here. The ode. Now, fi minag ha-makom gam matana me'ein zo haita tu'una Haskamat am ha'aretz. Also, the archaeological evidence indicates that these type of gifts can only be done with broad approval. That's why, essentially, it's a referendum. Look what's going on here. Vayakam gave it to.
Pasuk.
I'm looking.
Here, Sheva.
Look at that, right? Vayakam Avraham v'yishtachavu la'am ha'aretz l'vnei chayv. This conversation is about giving me this land. It's going on in front of everyone. This is not Avraham just talking to Ephron. In fact, he hasn't Ephron. We don't know where Ephron is at this point because only later he says, I'd like you to bring my proposal to Ephron. But first he has to clear it with the people.
Yeah.
Meaning if the people said, no, we don't want anything to do, we're not getting Ephron. Meaning first the people have to agree. If Ephron agrees to give it to you, we agree to give it to you. That's why it's weird, right? Why does he go to the people first and only then go to the owner of the land? Now it makes sense. Because the law is the people have to agree
to give it.
To give it. And then Ephron, who's the owner, if he agrees to give it, fine. But even if Ephron had agreed to give it, if the people hadn't agreed to give it,
he cannot
because he's a foreigner, right? Because he's a foreigner. So first he goes to the people, then he goes to Ephron,
and
right?
By this also, there is a lot of witnesses for the what happened.
Ah, that's going to answer our other question, right? So he goes to Bnei Chet, and so their agreement becomes very important, because without it, Ephron cannot do the deal. So that brings us to the next question, which is, why is there no documentation about this? So one answer could be, if I give you this phone, we're not going to document it. I'm giving it to you. It's a gift, right? We only document, right? There's no conversation in this. There's nothing in this conversation about a contract. So we started off with that question. Why not? One answer could be, there could be no contract because there was no sale.
Well, but then
it's cash. You don't have to.
There were witnesses over there, and that's the reason why he bought it in front of Kahal Ambe.
Right. So one answer could be there's no contract because there's no sale. The other answer could be there's no contract because you don't need a contract. That's why he has it in front of all the people. That's even better than a contract. A contract could be lost. A contract could only be read by the literate people. And at this time, only the higher up for literate. If you really want something to stick, you want to do it in front of a lot of people. And so maybe that's why there's no contract. That could be too. Let me share with you a little bit about what Yitzhak Meitlis says about this as well. He says, so first of all, it's the root of katav does not appear at all in the whole book of Bereshit. That's just an interesting tidbit, right? In the whole book of Genesis, the word katav doesn't exist. Apparently, meaning there's no record of anything being written down, no conversations, no agreements. There are lots of agreements, agreements about wells, agreements about peace treaties, this agreement, but none of them are written down in the book of, the first time we come to that root of katav is in the book of Shemot in chapter 17. Ketov zot zikaron b'sefer v'sim bazne Yehoshua ki macho emche zecher Amalek. Which really makes the question even stronger. If the best way to get a point across to the people of never to forget Amalek is to write it down, then why wasn't this written down? Right. So that's what he's going to argue. So he says a few very interesting things. He says, first of all, as Yitzhak said, doing it out in the public may take the place of, or may be even better than a contract, because everyone sees it. And he says, "Shtar zot va'od, shtar lo haya mo'il, shechein b'tkufat ha'avot, hayta k'tiva nachalatam habiladit shechvat ha'sofrim, sheyashrav mirkazei ha'shelton v'ha'minahel." Right? The only people who were literate were the scribes, and they were part of the upper echelons. They were part of the rulers of the Lonacha Toshil Hatzibor Harachav, and most people didn't know how to read. So, what good was a contract? Although Ephron was one of the higher ups, but in the end, that's only going to solve a problem between you and Ephron. But if in fact it's true that you need the agreement of everybody, a contract's not going to help because they can't read it. So you have to do it in public.
How do you know that Abraham was literate?
That's a good question. We don't. Listen to this. B'chol hachafirot be'eretz Yisrael ad hayom. So he says, in all of the archaeological excavations, until this day, which means until 2014. So it's pretty recent. Lo nimtzu'u te'udot k'tuvot me'reshit tkufat ha-bronza ha-tichona. There's nothing from the Bronze Age, which is Avraham's age, from about the 18th century before
BC.
Right, BC. V'hitgalu rak me'at tu'udot b'chtav yitdot me'hameot ha-17th va-16th l'fi ha-sfira. We have very few from right? And listen to this. Bahare Yehuda hitgalta b'chafirot tel chevron rak tu'uda achat. Right? In all of Yehuda, there's only one written contract that they found from the 17th century BC. Dahainu lemala mea shanim la'achar reshit tkufat avot. This is 100 years after davot. So he's saying it wasn't done largely because people were illiterate. It wouldn't have served the purpose. Domeh, this is really amazing. Ki talich kniyat marat ha-machpelah mitba'er od yoter al reka ha-chok ha-chiti shitkala b'tu'udot b'ir ha-tushash, ha-tusa, is what we say in English, which is the capital city of Chet, the capital city of these people. They found it, and be'ezor Turkiya, right? And they found their rules. Listen to this. Ha-choker Manfred Lehman Mitzayin, she'al PC 46-47, based on law number 46 and 47 in their rules. This is amazing. And this is why you need to study archaeology to understand the Torah. Because we have a question. We didn't answer this question yet. Why does Ephron try to pawn off the Ma'ara, the Sadeh? All Avraham wants to buy is the Ma'ara. And Avraham says, not only can you have the Ma'ara, I'll throw in the Sadeh. Why doesn't Ephron want the Sadeh? Why is he throwing it in? Listen to this. It's amazing.
Does it make him a Tushav when he has a Sadeh?
Interesting. Could be. But that's not what Liebman says, based on 46 and 47. He says the following. Misei ha-melech ha-mutalim a-balei karkaot. So the taxes owed to the king by landowners. Chalim rak al mishe kone karkaot b'shlei mutan me-ha-mocher. You only got to pay taxes if you buy the whole parcel. Apparently, there are parcels. This is a parcel. This is a parcel. If you buy a portion of the parcel, who has to pay the taxes?
The
original owner. You know, in order for transfer the tax burden from the right to the new buyer, you have to sell the whole parcel. Lumat zot im adam kone rak chelek me'akarkaot misei ha-melech v'achavot shehu matil nisharim ach tafei ha-mocher. The original owner, the seller of part of the parcel. Le'or zot, right? Mistaber ki Ephron achiti haya munyan lihipater me'achavot le'melech sheyu mutalot al ktefav b'shel ba'aluto shel ha-karka. Ephron wants to get rid of the whole entire burden. V'alkein hitakesh l'mchor et kol ha-sadeh al af she'Avraham haya munyan l'knot rak et marat ha-machpilah shelo v'asher b'ktzeh ha-sadeh. Right? Avraham only wants the Ma'ara. Ephron says, get the whole thing. Now we know why. Because selling the Ma'ara doesn't help him. He gets the cash, but he's still got to pay taxes on it. Who would want that? You don't have the land, you want to pay taxes on it. So if I'm going to already sell the Ma'ara, I'll get rid of the whole thing.
What price does it all?
Lehman Mosif. Listen to this. Lehman adds the following: She'al pi ha'chok ha'chiti yesh leta'ed gamet mispar ha'itzim ha'gedalim b'shetach ha'adamah ha'nimker. You also have to take into account the number of trees as part of the tax burden. Hadavar mavhir et divrei ha'pasuk ha'misayim et ha'parsha. Now we can understand the end of the end. Look at verse 17 at the end of the whole story. Page 42. So Ephron's land in Machpelah near Mamre, the field with its cave and all the trees anywhere within the confines of the field past Avram. What do I care? Of course the trees were included. Now, why does the Torah tell us the trees? Because that's part of the way the Chitim did business. The trees were part of the tax burden. That's why it says the field with its cave and all the trees anywhere within the confines of that field passed to Avraham. So now who has to pay taxes on the trees?
Avraham. Once he pays tax, is he a Tushav?
No.
I need to know if the transaction finishes with
I think the only way to be a Tushav is to be a Chiti. No. You have to be a biological Chiti. I don't know if you can convert to Chitiism or not.
Is that a religion or a person?
Right. So now we know why the Torah tells us about the trees too. So his conclusion, B'sikumam shel devarim, niraki tiur kniat marat ha-machpelah, misapek yedarav erech, we get a lot of very valuable knowledge, al talich kniat ha-karka b'chevra she'ena yodat Korev Katu, right? Now, how they did business, illiterate people did business. Kemo gam alachuk hachiti. We also now understand their rules. Shetoshvei Chevron hachitim kach mistaber pa'alu le'oro. They were following the rules, but not really, right? So according to this, Avraham was engaged with them in a ha'arama, a loophole, to allow them to maintain the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law. So he got his field. Ephron is freed from a large tax burden. Now we know why the trees are included, and now we know why Ephron tries to push the field on Avraham when all he wants. And then it also explains why the Torah doesn't use the word of buying and selling, l'knot u'limkor, but only really uses latet, which again brings up a question as to this translation. But again, this translation is following the general understanding, which is it was a classic transaction. But another way to look at it in light of this archaeological evidence is that it was not a transaction. Well, it wasn't a buy and sell. They were both gifting each other things.
They gifted
Avraham the land, and he gifted them the money.
Right.
Right.
But if you don't have the archaeology translate that you have, people look at it differently.
Which is why it's important to.
How would they look upon it?
As a regular transaction.
As a regular transaction.
If you don't know that you're not allowed to own land if you're not a Chiti, if you don't know that about the tax burden, these are details, and the Torah gives details.
Yeah, but now we understand
much better.